Tango Tango Papa 1795, November 12, 2013.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you this evening from Amarillo, Texas. So, I spent the night last night at Cuba, Missouri, and I ended up coming all the way to Amarillo. I had about 3 minutes driving time left. Excuse me. I had about 3 minutes of driving time left, and but I made it. So now, after I take a break, I can leave here by about 11:15 Central Time. So after I take a break here, then I've got about 7 hours and 40 minutes remaining that I can drive. Today, the 12th, because it is after, it's 1:45 a.m. right now. So I've got 7 hours, 7 hours and 40 minutes, and I'll have to figure out where that'll put me at. I'll try to find a truck stop somewhere. I haven't calculated that yet, but so anyway, I'll drive that, and then I'll take another break, and then after midnight, then I get 8 hours and 55 minutes, and so I can drive that, and then take another break, and then after that break, I'll have to time it probably so that I arrive. What I want to do is, I'll get the time, I'll get more time after midnight that night, which will be Wednesday. I'm thinking correctly. That'll be Wednesday night at midnight Central Time. I'll get more time, and then I could, at that point, I should have 4 to 5 hours more driving time to make it to Fresno. And so I'll probably, I'll probably try to, since the place doesn't have any parking, I'll probably time it so that I'll get there maybe about an hour ahead, an hour before. I'll have to kind of figure the timing out as I sort of go along. But so I do believe I'll make it, but I just have to kind of be a little bit flexible with sort of shifting my time around. So anyway, it was pretty nice most of the day. Even over in Oklahoma, it got dark, around 5:30 or to 6 o'clock. Oh, shit, sorry about that. It got, it was still about 60 degrees, but then there's been this cool air has been moving in, and, the farther west I went, the more, the more erratically it was dropping. And before too long, I got west of Oklahoma City, not that far, and it was 45 degrees. And so, by the time I made it here to Amarillo, it says it's about 33 degrees or, However, it's cooler than that because there's this freezing drizzle. And it is kind of freezing on my mirrors, and it doesn't appear to be freezing on the ground or the pavement, but it is freezing on surfaces such as mirrors and what have you. So I don't know. I'm sure tomorrow it'll probably warm up again, but right now, and I think the last time I looked, the low was supposed to be around 30 here at Amarillo. So it's, could turn into kind of a freezing rain type situation where it's actually freezing on the roadway, but as of right now, it's not. The pavement is just wet. So, but it's that time of year, and things like that happen. So, in any case, in the last podcast, I was kind of talking about the use of the so-called generic use of the N-word and so on and so forth. And to elaborate on that a bit more, I think one of the things that you can come away from is that groups of people that are sort of based on, that have groupthink, they've got this groupthink or tribethink is another way of thinking of it. They've got this, and it's based around resentment. And so you think of it, well, it's culture. It's a cultural thing. Their culture. One of the things you have to realize is that culture is a sort of a false, it's sort of a fake identity. Because a genuine identity is, if you've got, if you're really sort of bonded in a ground of being sense with God, with your Creator, that's the real identity. But if you're not, if you're kind of a fallen human being, and particularly if you cling to your resentment, won't let it go, you end up with this sort of groupthink or tribethink, culture. And it's kind of a fake identity. It's sort of a false identity. And with that kind of an identity, it's sort of a fake identity, you become more and more sensitive to the outside world. You begin to, things such as words, just mere words, begin to have an effect on you. So on and so forth. And so one thing that the thought sort of crystallized a little bit, if you have one of these groups, and we'll take the black people, the black, so-called black culture, we'll just use that as a good example. They can degrade each other, the degraders, and they're kind of degraded because, if you're filled with resentment, and you've got this sort of resentment-based groupthink going on, and you won't let go of the resentment, you end up with this false identity, and of course you're separated, you become more and more sensitive, and so on and so forth. But the degraded, you're in a degraded state. Excuse me. So you're in a degraded state. And so one thing you can take away from it is a group that's sort of degraded. And it's really it's self-degradation at this point, this applies to anybody that has any resentment at all. We're talking about a more extreme example where groups of people have built entire identities out of it, sort of so-called cultural identity out of it. But if you have that kind of an identity, you're actually degraded. And so the degraded, you can take away from this, degraded groups of people, degraded people can degrade each other. They're sort of free to degrade each other, but in certain instances, if someone from the outside dares to even say the word, it's sort of like a double standard. But it goes beyond, it goes beyond a double standard. It's really I think it goes to this, something as simple as this. You can see someone else's faults. So, you know, the it's easy to see other people's faults, but it's difficult to see your own. So let's say you're in one of these groups that you know, you've kind of got the group think going on, the tribe think, and you feel you don't really realize you're degrading each other, you know, and of course people are under, you know, people that are degraded are under a compulsion to degrade each other, so they kind of degrade each other and so on and so forth. But they, if someone from the outs that's not part of the group, that's not part of the tribe, if they, you know, their faults are very easy for these people to see, but they can't see their own faults. And so that's why, you know, they're under a compulsion. You have to remember, they're not choosing to do this. They're under a compulsion to degrade each other. And it's insidious, because they, you know, they can blame someone else. It's easy to, if you've, you know, your ancestors were oppressed and so on and so forth, and you've had this resentment put into you as a child, and it was put into their parents and so on and so forth, you know, and it just keeps getting passed from one generation to the next, then, and you're taught, well, it's this other person, you see this person over here, it's their fault, it's really their fault, and no one's telling you that you can get out of it. And what you have to do is stop resenting. And that applies to any group, anyone with resentment, because we all do. We all end up resenting, and then we all go through this thing where we're proud of it. Now, there are actually at least three types of people, and I've talked about this before, but it's worth repeating. There are really three types of people. I don't believe, for example, that everyone can be saved. I don't believe that everyone is savable, despite what traditional religions teach and have taught. I don't believe that everyone is savable. I think that there are people, you know, the Bible even talks about, you know, the elect and the, you know, so on and so forth. What does that mean? What are they talking about? Those are people that I think I interpret it. This is my interpretation, my opinion. So don't get all ballistic. This is my opinion. I believe that when the Bible talks about the elect, it's talking about people, the group, the small percentage of people that actually want to know the truth, and that are really setting about truly finding the truth, and not simply trying to find, you know, to discover that they're the truth. You know, there are tons of people that say they want to know the truth and so on and so forth, but when it comes right down to it, they don't. They're looking for evidence that they're really God, you know, and maybe they just want, you know, they have a guilty conscience, and they're looking for some way of numbing it. So you have a small percentage of people that really want to know the truth, and then you have a large percentage of people that don't. There are plenty of people that despise the truth. They don't want to know. They've still got consciences. They despise the truth. And then you have this third type of person, and thankfully there are not very many of them, but there's this third type of person that has no conscience at all. They're a sociopath. And fortunately, most sociopaths end up in prison. Some of them end up becoming politicians, and some of them, those are very dangerous, because they're able to see. They know the truth. They're able to see, but they have no conscience. Right and wrong, you know, doing something wrong doesn't bother them. They have no problem at all, you know, squashing another human being as if they're a bug. and using your weaknesses, using human being weaknesses to gain their own power. So you could say they're sort of the elect of Satan, in a sense. You know, you have the elect of God, and then you have the elect of Satan. You have the elect of those that want to find the truth, and you have the elect of those that are sort of completely consumed and given over to evil. So, but it's you know, we live in a very interesting world, and we do seem, you know, it seems to be, we do seem to be coming to a head, and it you know, who knows how long, you know, it's going to take. We have no clue. It could go on for years and years and years, or it could be over tomorrow. But if you really have, if you're really able to find the true ground of being, it doesn't really matter, you know, what trouble you have to go through. It doesn't really matter how rotten the people are around you. That bond that true ground of being bond cannot be shaken. And it's sort of a paradox. Because you can just look out and sort of see the social upheavals, see that people are really screwed up already, and they're other people around them are easily screwing them up more. Look out and see people that are just, they're permanently screwed up. Permanently wicked. And somehow it doesn't matter. Somehow there is no anxiety. Now, another thing about resentment, there are plenty of people that think that, as I've said many times, they think of it as some sort of a protection, and that, you know, they kind of keep it around, and they think that they can turn a negative into a positive, and so on and so forth. And what you really have to understand, and you may not, it may just come across as me saying it, you may hear the words and they sort of don't mean anything to you. But if you have resentment and you won't let it go, you are putting other people in charge of programming you. It's plain and simple. It's a fact. If you have resentment, and it doesn't matter what it is, whatever it is, wherever it is, if you have it, you're putting other people, it could be places and things as well, it's usually people, you're enslaving yourself. You're keeping yourself enslaved. And so it's resentment is not something you want to hold on to. It's deadly. So, I just kind of wanted to talk about that a little bit more, particularly the thought, it's okay for the degraded to sort of degrade each other that are part of a group. You know, if you have a group of people that are sort of degraded generally, and they sort of share a degradation. You know, and of course they see it as something positive. They see their degraded groupthink, their degraded tribethink as something, you know, it unites them and it's something positive. The degraders, you know, the degraded, in this case, the degraded they'll degrade each other. It's okay for them to degrade each other, but you can't... you know, someone from the outside dare not, they can see their faults. They can see those other people's faults. They can't see their own. The last thing that they can see is that they're degrading. And I think that's generally true of people that are in abusive relationships. You know, they're really degrading each other. So-called codependency. They're really degrading each other. And let's say you have a husband and a wife that are sort of degrading each other, you know, and the husband's beating the wife or whatever. Or it could be, sometimes it flips around the other way and it's the wife beating the husband. But it doesn't really matter which one's which. One of them assumes the role of the bully and the other has the role of the coward. Sometimes that'll flip-flop. So, but let's say you have two spouses that are abusing each other. You know, and one of them's beating the other one. If you intervene with that, if you try to intervene, chances are they're going to turn on you. And, you know, a lot of people, if you've ever tried, I've never done it, my dad did, and he observed it. He observed that, you know, he started to intervene, and boy, they both turned on him. And so a lot of people have been able to make that observation, and I'm sure if you talk to people that, you know, like policemen, they're able to ease. They'll tell you the story that they'll both turn on you. And it's sort of the same thing. It's okay for them to degrade each other, but they can see, you know, someone else, they can see their faults very easily. You know, that outside person. How dare you... impinge on them. So I think, you know, what the, at least some police do now is they put both of them in jail, which is good. That's actually the way it should be. If people are sort of, you know, kind of engaging to the, you know, to the point where they're beating up on each other and so on and so forth, then they both should go to jail if the police get called. Takes two to tango. Another thought that is worth talking about, you know, there's this idea that it's if you want to get somebody to do something, it's easier to you know, sort of approach them with honey, you know, and, you know, the old saying is it's easier to attract bees with honey than it is to, you know, than to, you know, you know, I don't know the saying exactly, but, you know, as opposed to something bitter or whatever. And, or, you know, sugar is another thing that they'd say. And, you know, I can see the sort of the line of thought with that, but the fact of the matter is, if you want to manipulate someone, someone's manipulatable, irritation works just as well. You don't necessarily, you know, the honey only works a certain part of the time. That only works part of the time. So if you really want to manipulate them, then you've got to make them mad. And if someone can make you mad, if someone can agitate you, as I said many times, they can make you do whatever they want to. And you'll defend it. You'll end up defending it as if it was you acted out of your own volition, when in fact you did not. You were manipulated by your own resentment, via your own resentment, your own agitation, your own wanting to play God, your own lack of a genuine bonding with a genuine ground of being. And there is that ground of being, is that's actually our Creator. It's nothing mysterious, and it's nothing, you know, some cloud in the sky or whatever else. It's right here, right now, in this moment. God isn't some academic concept. Some nice being in the sky, nice guy in the sky. So I think, you know, the elect that the Bible talks about, the elect are looking for that. They may not be able to put it into words, they may not realize it at first. The elect are really looking for that genuine ground of being, and that's the only thing that will do. And the other people, that's the last thing they want. That's their enemy. And so they simply become part of a necessary part of the experiment that sort of puts the elect to the test. So before you go ballistic, these are my opinions. I have opinions, and I say what I think. That's what this podcast is about. I say what I think. And if you don't agree with me, fine. I don't really care. I'm just expressing my thoughts. So, anyhow, I think I'm going to go ahead and cut this off, see if I can get headed to bed so I can get up later this morning and kind of get moving again. And, you know, provided that the freezing rain kind of quits, or at least it warms up a little bit. So I hope everyone is having a great week so far, and I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com. Yeah.